Warrior is on the air.
Well, hello, ladies and gentlemen. This is your host, Ben Bueller Garcia. Welcome to another episode of American Warrior Radio. Going to be very interesting. We're going to talk about something that, well, at least for my Southern Arizona listeners, are not very familiar with. We're going to be talking about the Silent Service, Life in Submarines, with Captain Kevin Pepe, United States Navy retired. Before we do that, though, we're going to go to another gentleman, an avid supporter of American Warrior Radio, some of the most entertaining commercials in the local market, but also a fellow whose support for the men and women of our military knows no bounds. Very active out there. Chris Edwards. Chris, welcome to American Warrior Radio. What do you have to share with us this morning, Chris?
Well, thank you so much for having me on today, Ben. I want to tell you we appreciate everything the men and women do for our country. And the Conquistador Classic, which is March 12th to the 19th, we have a bunch of scheduled events for the entire week for the entire family. And I want you to know, for the men and women that are on base, we're going to have a bus that will transport you from in front of the base. There's a park in the front, and it's going to go all the way to the tournament and come back during the day. We'll have scheduled times for that later on. I really appreciate you having me on, Ben. The most important thing to get out of this is if you can go to conquistadorsclassic.com. It's going to have all the information I'm going to rattle off to you, and I'm going to be quick because I know you don't have much time.
Well, don't worry, relax. You're an advertiser. It's okay, Chris.
All right, pal. Hey, I appreciate it. I just want to make sure everybody knows everything that's going on during the week. It's a lot of fun. So Sunday, March 12th, we have the Conquistador Classic Run Walk, the course, which is a 5K, and there's information on conquistadorsclassic.com to get signed up and get some exercise. Then Wednesday and Thursday, we're going to have the Pro-Am, which you can come out free of charge. And we don't have the buses running those days. But if you do come up, you also have the opportunity to volunteer as a caddy, which is also on conquistadorsclassic.com. And volunteering, we are looking for about another 150 volunteers. So if that is in your time schedule to volunteer up there, we're looking for marshals, standard bearers, walking scorers. And if you volunteer for a minimum of, I believe it's 3 days, I can't remember the exact amount of hours, but it's not too many, they'll receive 10 good any day tickets. And if you work for 24 hours, you get a volunteer golf day.
And Chris, let me just, I mean, this is the classic. These are the purse. I think the total purse is over $1 million. These are some of the best names to ever play the game are coming to Tucson.
That's correct, and we just recently signed Steve Stricker. He'll be there. We got John Daly, and there's many men that have won many competitions that'll be there during this time.
And again, to emphasize, if you're a member of the active duty military, or is this apply to veterans as well?
It does. It applies to military and veterans. I'll get into that part where we're going to have a Patriots Outpost open to our military and veterans, which is fully sponsored by the Conquistadors and Liftmaster and many other people from the community. You're going to be able to get free into the tournament Friday, Saturday, Sunday. There's going to be lunch available with, I believe, a couple of days. We're going to have the Hooters girls and the Hooters food there. Drink is going to be available, some alcoholic beverages, and it's going to be one humongous party for the military because we appreciate everything they do. And again, we'll have those buses running during the tournament, the Friday, Saturday, and Sunday, going all the way up there. So you may just have to come out to the front and park, and then we'll take you up there and bring you back for an enjoyable weekend. It's going to be phenomenal.
So,
go ahead.
Well, Chris, so basically, if you're a member of the military, and let's not forget the Guard and Reservists as well, they and their families can go up there any day, the 12th or the 19th, and enjoy some great free golf.
That is true. And Monday and Tuesday is where the practice rounds go on. And we'll have food vendors out there and stuff like that. The only thing is the Patriots Outpost with free food and drink is only open Friday, Saturday, and Sunday. We definitely want you there. But all the other days, more than welcome to come, including the 5K run, which is phenomenal.
Wonderful. Chris, thanks so much. Folks, you can get more information at conquistadorclassic.com. Chris, can folks sign up there to volunteer as well?
They sure can. There's an application on conquistadorsclassic.com. And one last thing, there's a St. Patrick's party right after the last putt drop. We're going to have a phenomenal party with basketball tournament viewing. Basketball for the Pac-12 tournament is going to be all over. And it's just going to be one great time for Tucson And it's all about the kids also. All the money, all the volunteers that are out there, we're raising money for kids in Tucson, our Tucson community.
Okay. Well, Chris Edwards, thank you so much. And thanks to your fellow conquistadors for all that you do for our community and have done for over these many years.
And, Ben, I appreciate you hosting this program. It's about our military and what they do for our country, the men and women. Thank you so much, sir, for taking over for our man, Dave Sitton.
Well, thank you so much, Chris. That's quite a compliment. Well, there you have it, ladies and gentlemen. Again, if you serve in the military, active duty, guard, reserve, this is an amazing tournament. Some of the best names to ever play the game of golf will be right here in Tucson in March. You can go check that out free of charge, you and your dependents as well. So with that, we're going to get into the main topic of today's show. Most of you should know, if you don't know, Tucson has her own submarine. It's a Los Angeles-class base, Los Angeles-class fast attack submarine based out of Pearl Harbor, Hawaii. But I find that folks don't know that much about the Silent Service, and it's been my experience, it is a special kind of service, and it takes a special type of person to serve there. So joining us today to bring us up to speed on submarines and life as a submariner, we can't say submariner, Kevin Pepe, United States Navy retired, welcome. Your first appearance on American Warrior Radio.
Great to be here, Ben. Thank you very much.
Well, now, Kevin, you, this is, now you served, you're the chief engineer in the USS La Jolla, SSN 701, that you are the commander of the USS Atlanta, SSN 712, then you were the commodore of Sub Squadron 8, and if folks don't know the commodore, so basically you're in charge of several submarines.
Yeah, there's a number of squadrons out there, and they each have a commander, and in my case, there was seven submarines in the squadron, and in different cases, it's different numbers,
mm-hmm.
but that's what it is.
Now, Sub Squadron 8, when you were the commodore, was that what side of the,
that was
which
Norfolk,
beast
Norfolk,
is that on?
Norfolk,
okay.
Virginia.
Okay, so on the East Coast Squadron. Now, Kevin, this is interesting. Sometimes I give my guests a hard time, but I've decided I shouldn't because you've got a bachelor's in aerospace engineering, two master's degrees, but also a Juris Doctorate, a law degree. Where did that come from?
Well, that was an interesting experience for me. I was actually at a place called National Defense University in Washington in 2000, 99, 2000, as a student. And in keeping, my wife and I have six children, and in keeping with this sort of sense we both had that we ought to demonstrate to our kids that learning isn't something you just do till you're 22 or 23 and stop. Mm-hmm. I thought since I was going to be in D.C., I would fill up the rest of my evenings, if you will, with something which would demonstrate to the kids that we're going to really do this. And so I went to law school for 3 years while I was a geo-bachelor. My family stayed down in Virginia Beach. I was up in Washington doing the Pentagon thing in National Defense University. And so it was a great learning for me. I learned a new way to think. And I think, at least I hope, that my kids got the idea that, hey, even the old guy's still doing this, so I'm going to keep at it.
Okay, that's very impressive. Commanding submarines, lots of education, and a law degree. Did you never thought about practicing, though? You just...
Well, actually, I have, and, there's still I'm not quite done yet, so there's still the possibility that I'll find my way clear to do some pro bono work or something like that.
Wonderful. You're still a young man.
Thank you.
Folks, stick around. This is going to be
your
very...
Your standards are too low, by the way.
Yeah. Oh, that's how it's going to be. It's going to be a great show. Stick around. We're going to talk about life on a submarine and also just sort of look forward to, and I got to emphasize this, how important this implement of war is and how diverse it is and why we need to keep them going moving forward. Again, your host, Ben Bueller Garcia. Stick around.
Now, back to the American Warrior.
Welcome back, folks. Your host, Ben Bueller Garcia, here on American Warrior Radio. We're talking about the Silent Service with Kevin Pepe, who is a United States Navy captain, retired. And again, for our Southern Arizona listeners, just so you don't, well, we got to get this out. A Navy captain is the equivalent of an Air Force or an Army colonel. Just want to be clear. We had a member of the 770 Club, Kevin, who served in the Second World War, Korea, 33 years in the Navy, retired as a captain. But he always complained that whenever he'd go out to Davis-Monthan Air Force Base and tell people he spent 30 years in and only retired as a captain, folks were like, what are you, a slacker? That's not very good. But he had explained, no, Colonel.
Captain,
and he just
Colonel,
gave up.
Neither of which is important as a sergeant or chief, by the way.
Well, very, very good point. Kevin, let's talk a little bit about And I've had the honor and frankly the thrill to go to sea aboard our USS Tucson. And the mission of that was definitely achieved. As a civilian, just spending a few hours on that boat, seeing what, in this case, these men do, wow. I mean, amazing. You're talking 138 to 150 sailors in a steel tube about the length of about a football field long, but filled with lots of equipment. I want to start off by saying it's interesting you made that comment about lifelong learning, because, correct me if I'm wrong, everybody I've met that served aboard a nuclear submarine, highly educated, very practical. And is that's by design, isn't it? I mean, I know everybody on the submarine is a firefighter, because that's one of the biggest threats you can have. But is everybody also cross-trained? I mean, does the cook at least know the basics of nuclear fission?
Well, yes and no. So first off, it's important to note that the submarine force is for a long time and probably will remain for a long time an all-volunteer force. So It's not as if we're yanking people in to come on submarines. It's a very selective process to get through. The crew is trained in all aspects of the submarine business. Now, you won't be surprised to know that, you know, for the guys who worry themselves a lot about the nuclear power plant and the propulsion system, there's a different sort of training pipeline they'll go through than the guys who worry themselves about the torpedoes or the Tomahawk cruise missiles. But everybody knows the basics of the submarine, and everybody can support everybody else. It's hard to put into words just how much, when that hatch closes and you dive the ship, you know, you could well be out of communications for many months with anybody. In fact, one of the little things people don't think too much about is, you know, we would take these ships off the coast of Virginia, and you can pick any port you want, and dive after a couple hours on the surface. And in some cases, literally, if 3 months later we didn't show back up again at that spot, no one would have known. It could have happened that same day. We could have submerged a ship and been lost and never have gotten back. It happened to ships like the Scorpion and Thresher. There's been some accidents that have occurred. So you once you close that hatch, it's only then that you really can feel viscerally how important it is, that concept of shipmate. You rely on everybody else at every second of the day to make sure you come back alive to your family. So people aspire to work so hard. These kids work so hard to learn everything they can about the submarine. There's no limit to what those guys want to know. And it's important for that reason.
Now, your folks that are back, correct me if I'm wrong, Kevin, but back in the nuke plant, you don't necessarily have to have studied nuclear engineering in college to go back there. I mean, you could take a political science major and train him to work in the back, right?
Right, right. As long as they've got demonstrate the aptitude, the willingness, and the perseverance, I guess, to stick at it. It's not necessarily the case that all those folks are engineers, nuclear trained engineers or anything else. We have a wide variety of people back there.
Now, it's one of my things that I like to emphasize, Kevin, because I think particularly those of us civilian need to know the war is a dangerous business. War is not only dangerous when someone is shooting at you. And when I think about that, I think about pilots. I think about folks that are manning our submarines. Several years ago, we had an A-ganger who was here speaking here in Tucson to some kids at a school, and they asked him, what do you fear the most? And you would expect him to say, getting shot by another torpedo or whatever. And he said, what I fear the most is fire and a break in a hydraulic line. Mm-hmm. And the way he explained it, if I heard him correctly, I mean, down there, a pinhole in a certain line down there can just drill a hole straight through a man.
Oh, yeah.
And like you said, you're underwater someplace. There's no help coming, necessarily. No. You've got to do it yourself.
Right. You know, that's the whole shipmate concept. I mean, those folks down there know that it's the other guy who has their back during, 24/7. Again, literally 24/7, every second of the day. So while I don't know how I'd answer the question of what, my greatest fear was, I was on board five different submarines. I would tell you that what he said, hydraulic leaks, flooding, fire, they're ever-present dangers, and the crews out there are training day in and day out to combat those casualties. Now, that's not to say they're not training to go off to combat and do the things that we're paid to go do. I would have answered a little differently. Especially as the captain, the thing that weighed so heavily on me time in and time out, that you worry about the crew all the time. There's 100 people out there. The average age of these folks in your crew is maybe 22 years old. So
wow.
They're very, very young.
Okay.
Very bright. I mean, if anybody out there listening is worried about today's cadre of young people, just stop. Go off and watch operations on a carrier. Go watch a submarine do things. Go watch the flight lines work. Go to a tank company. There's fantastic kids out there doing great, great work. But it is something that, you have control of. I mean, as a relatively senior person, you can control a lot of what goes on. What you don't have control of, and what was on my mind all the time, frankly, were the real heroes, in my opinion, and that was the families back home.
Mm.
I mean, imagine what it's like for a spouse and the children or whatever to simply know that their husband, now wife, is gone and won't be back for months at a time. You don't have any idea what's going on out there and what's taking place. And if one of the children gets sick or if there's a car accident, how these people do it day in and day out in support of those guys who tend to get all the credit, I don't know. But they're the real unsung heroes. It's those dependents that are back home that I worried myself about every day.
You know, it's interesting, Kevin, the more I research and spend time with the submarines, the phrase the silent service, it's got a lot of different meanings. I mean, silent being could be, a silent attack. People aren't supposed to know where you're there. But you just alluded to another part of it is when they deploy, when they go to sea, it's not, and not to say that any other service is less difficult, but if I'm on the ground somewhere, more than likely I can Skype or I can, email or something like that. But again, you and your men, your sailors are out there. And that's not—I'm guessing that's rarely available, that kind of a communication.
Well, as I said earlier, the nature of submarine operations, and we've been talking about what we call fast attack submarines,
right.
The ones that are like the Hunt for Red October type of submarines. There are instances where you have some communications window, and even instances where you pull into a port,
mm-hmm.
and you have access to all the normal modern conveniences. But there are many instances out there where you have none of that, you are submerged for a long period of time and cannot transmit. You can, but procedurally you're not allowed to transmit. And so you are very much shut in and you don't know what's going on back with the wife and kids or the husband and the kids. And so it plays on everybody's mind all the time. And the thing that just took up so much of my energy and time was making sure that the folks I had out there were going to come back safe, because there were many people back there counting on that.
Mm-hmm.
And that you had to get that right.
What's the longest you were ever submerged?
I'm sure that that's not something I can talk about.
Okay.
But I think it's fair to say that if you thought about it like 100 days, that wouldn't be an exaggeration.
Okay.
And it could be, just a couple days. I mean, there are times when our skippers would go out, take the submarines down south into some ranges, and they'd surface every evening,
mm-hmm.
and do swim calls for the crew, whatever they were going to do. But it can be very, very long, long periods of time in that sewer pipe, in that tube.
Sewer pipe. Well, it's interesting you mention that. One of my not-so-pleasant experiences on the USS Tucson was trying to figure out how to flush the toilet. Everything on a submarine is complex. This is like, I think, a four-step process, Kevin, with levers and knobs. And if you didn't do it correctly, it was a bad day. I'd ask a sailor to come flush the toilet for me. It was kind of embarrassing.
Yeah, it's not your standard. It's not even your standard boat toilet, as a matter of fact, that the recreational boaters might know about. It's a slightly different contraption, but it works very well.
Now, we're going to take a break here in a couple of minutes, but the schedule, the day, I use quotation fingers, on a submarine is not like the day for the rest of us. I mean, pretty much you're on watch, sleeping, eating, or studying, or training, right? I mean, that's a
very interesting one. I often thought there ought to be some psychologists down here, sociologists, to kind of watch, because, and I might be wrong and out of date, because I know there's been a lot of work going on in the current force, and I've been out of the force since 2003. But back when I was doing this, when you shut that hatch, you went almost immediately to an 18-hour day. There's no sun, so you didn't care about sunrise, sunset, and all that. Your sort of body clock didn't care about that. And so what would happen was you would, I'll describe it, for 6 hours you'd be on watch. You'd be doing what it is you had to do to make the ship move forward. If you were a ship driver, you'd be driving the ship. If you were a sonarman, you'd be sitting at sonar. If you were in the engine room, you'd be helping run the reactor plant, blah, blah, blah. And then for 6 hours after that, you'd be actually doing your job. These are all very skilled tradesmen, extraordinarily skilled tradesmen. You mentioned A-gangers. Mm-hmm. These people are fantastic at their trade, which has everything and anything to do with pipes and plumbing and electricity and hydraulics and all that. Well, for 6 hours, they're doing that. I mean, one of the things that maybe it's not really well known is these things don't just keep working 24 hours a day. I mean, any period.
Well, think about your own car. I mean, yeah.
Well, at any day, any one, you know, you pick a point and take a look, there's many, many handfuls of things that aren't working properly, mm-hmm. that the guys, the gals are off fixing to make sure that they do work properly, because redundant systems, those type of things. So 6 hours of that, and then 6 hours to yourself. Now, if you choose to sleep during those 6 hours, that's your choice. If you choose to do other things, study, people do. So it's a very compressed schedule and very, very rigorous.
The galley on the USS Tucson is called the El Charro Down Under, which touches my heart. But that, very because nice. Of the nature of that, is the kitchen open? I can get food 24 hours a day, kind of, sort of, maybe?
Pretty much.
Okay.
Pretty much the case. I mean, it's certainly when you come off your watch station, there's food available for you every 6 hours.
And that food will vary depending on if it's the first day of deployment or the 100th day of deployment, I'm guessing.
You might be right about that.
Remind me to tell you a cute story when we come back. Yeah. Folks, your host, Ben Buehler-Garcia. I'm joined live in studio by Kevin Pepe. He's a retired U.S. Navy captain. 5 submarines, in addition, tours at the Pentagon, and then spend some time at Raytheon Missile Systems as well. Great conversation. Give us a call if you'd like, 751-1041. Check us out on Facebook, American Warrior Radio. We'll be right back.
Those who expect to reap the blessings of freedom must, like men, undergo the fatigue of supporting it. Now, back to the American Warrior.
Welcome back, folks. Your host, Ben Buehler-Garcia. We're talking about the silent service here on American Warrior today. We're joined live in studio by Kevin Pepe. Kevin is a retired United States Navy captain, a lot of time in submarines, 5 different boats. And were those all fast attack boats,
No,
Kevin?
The first one was a ballistic missile submarine, USS Andrew Jackson.
Okay, so I think we'd be remiss if we didn't clarify that. So the fast attack submarines we're mostly talking about, but there's also the ballistic missile submarines. Those are the big ones, right?
And they're extraordinarily important, yeah. So you said it just right. There's fundamentally, in the United States Navy, there's a class of attack submarines which goes off and sort of does that type of activity in support of battle groups and in support of national command, a bunch of things. But honestly, the really important business gets taken care of. And by the way, I should shout out to the shipbuilders. I mean, we have the nation has 2 of the greatest shipbuilders in the world, Newport News and Electric Boat, who we are so thankful for all they do. But the SSBNs, or the ballistic missile submarines, those are the ones that have maintained the peace for many, many years. So the idea there is they're out there unseen, quiet, doing their business to dissuade any near-peer competitor, anybody out there who might think otherwise, against an attack on the United States. Because they know, should they do that, these submarines are ready to go engage their nation, their center of gravity, if you will. And here you have, right now, 14 of those submarines out there, they carry more than half of the U.S. strategic deterrent, half the nuclear warheads.
Now, I'm glad you brought that up, because this is something I get very often, too. We have nuclear submarines, but like in the case of the fast attack boats, we're talking about nuclear-powered.
Nuclear-powered.
And in this case, you're talking about nuclear-powered and nuclear weaponry.
Right, correct.
Okay.
Correct. And yes, thanks for clarifying that. And the most important part about this discussion we're having is that those Ohio-class submarines are nearing their end of life. Mm-hmm. And the nation desperately, strongly needs a new class of submarines to go out there. They just recently named the class USS Columbia. But it's extraordinarily important that the United States, the citizenry of the United States, really understand the criticality of this new program and get in behind it. Because you won't be surprised by this. You know, across our Defense Department and other departments, there's a a real need for resources in a bunch of different, whether it's sure. aircraft or whether it's surface ships or tanks. We need a lot of things, and all those voices are out there arguing. No one should lose sight of that, the fact that the central issue in United States strategic defense are these Columbia-class submarines in the critical design phase right now. They're moving along. But supporting those things as best we can is really, really important.
Now, the other class, if you will, are basically, if I'm not mistaken, they're the Ohio class that have been converted to carry Tomahawks.
Yeah, so
they're
right. There's four of them that have been converted to carry Tomahawk lots of Tomahawk missiles mm-hmm. around. So you can imagine the deterrent capability, the don't get anything started capability of one of those submarines sitting off a coast with over 150 Tomahawk missiles ready to go. And this gives me a chance to give a shout out to Taylor Lawrence and his team here at Missiles mm-hmm. and what a great job those folks are doing. Again, it's the defense industrial base doesn't get at times the recognition they deserve. I mean, rightfully so. The men and women out there at the front lines, God bless them for it, and they're tremendous. But I'll tell you, if you got a chance to go into those offices over at Raytheon and see these people at work, day in and day out, selflessly, committed to one thing, not profit, they are committed to making sure this nation is well-defended and the best it can possibly be, every one of those guys, and they don't get the recognition they deserve at times.
One of the best experiences I've ever had, Kevin, we brought, on occasion we'll get the captain or some of the crew members from the Tucson that make a namesake visit to Tucson, and we happen to have an opportunity for them to go out and tour the Tomahawk line
there.
That's
great.
And the opportunity for an end user to meet the person working on that weapon and vice versa was
fantastic.
Just, I mean, you saw him, well, you know, the captain at that time said, look, I can't be more clear about this. If we get to a point where we have to use your product, once I fire that weapon, I've exposed myself. Now people know where I am. So if it doesn't work each and every time, me and all these guys could be dead. And you could see the Tomahawk workers just kind of swell up with pride and say, yeah, we make something that works. So now, one of your boats, the La Jolla, was the first one to successfully test fire a Tomahawk at sea. Were you on board at the time?
No, well before me.
Okay. No offense.
That's all right.
Okay, well, there's a connection there.
No, they're great, and it's a fantastic opportunity to get the folks, you know, there's over 10,000 American Patriots working down there, and when they get a chance to have the warfighters come in mm-hmm. and talk to them, it's a great experience, and I wish we could do more of that because it means a great deal to each and every one. I mean, I know how important, and I'm not speaking for the company here, but I know how important the missile company is to the Southern Arizona in terms of employment. But I don't think people really appreciate how important it is to the nation in terms of what they do, because it is irreplaceable as of today, and I'm just so proud of the folks down there.
And not just for our Navy personnel, but also our Air Force. And
Air Force,
some
Army.
Marine, Army. Yeah, the things
everybody,
that are coming off those.
Everybody.
Yeah. Oh, well. You know, I want to get into, you alluded to this, and this is something that, as a civilian, I'm very concerned about with even my limited knowledge. And, again, it came from experience on an unclassified briefing that I was allowed to sit in on. And basically, submarines are one of the oldest remaining, I mean, well, even more so than maybe within airplanes, but, I mean, submarines as a concept have been around a very long time. Mm. The diversity of the missions that they can perform are incredible compared to other pieces of equipment. You know, in the case of the fast attacks, your reconnaissance, intelligence gathering, you know, engaging other surface or underwater enemies, if you will. Putting Navy SEALs ashore, and you kind of alluded to that too. You know, if you're thinking of hostilities, you know, more than likely before those airmen and Marines and folks are landing or going in there, there's been a submarine out that's sort of evaluated the battle space and may even be launching Tomahawks to help prepare the battle space. As a consequence, I'm with you. Because the 688, the Los Angeles class?
Yes, 688, right.
Most of those are built in, what, 70s, 80s probably?
70s, 80s, and 90s. Yes.
And they're getting old. And
yes.
Like any
machine.
Well, in
fact, the Atlanta's been decommissioned.
Oh, well, you're one of your first boats.
Well, the boat I was in command of, yes.
Oh, okay, well.
In fact, I think all the submarines I was on are now decommissioned.
So
this
you
does
are old.
Need me.
No, but I mean, like any piece of machinery, these things can't run forever, and particularly given that they're powered by nuclear fuel, I'm guessing there's a shelf life on that reactor, mm-hmm. In addition to just the wear and tear of going up and down all the time. So we're running out of Los Angeles class. We're replacing those with the Virginia class. But are we replacing them as quick as they're going out of service?
No. Again, there's a lot of competing demands on scarce resources. You know, and I don't have to tell your listeners that there are a lot of things that need to be recapitalized in the nation's defense. Submarines are one of them. So where we are today is the force is down significantly below where we think it ought to be. I'm talking about attack submarines now. Mm-hmm. The SSBN force needs to be replaced, recapitalized and replaced. So a lot of resources required to keep a very, very important part of the nation's defense in place and operating. Now, there's good news. The good news is a recent study commissioned by and done by, objective arm's length people have said, hey, it looks to us like we need around 66 attack submarines at a minimum to defend the nation properly the way we're doing it. And it's because of what you said. One of the, sort of the double-edged things here about the submarine force is because it is silent, because what we do is generally relatively secretive, mm-hmm. It's hard to go out there and sort of advertise for or get people real excited about, because we don't talk a lot about it, which is important. Those folks came up with the number of 66 vice the about 48 we have today. And it looks like the current administration is about to commit or is committed to that number, which is an increased building rate, which puts a lot of great people in the Northeast to work up in Connecticut, down in Newport News in Virginia, mm-hmm. and keeps that industrial base going. So I think we've got a long ways to go, but I'm a little bit more sanguine than I was maybe 10 years ago.
I'm glad you touched on that point, because it is, at that level, it is a political game as much as, unfortunately, it's a strategic and a logistical game. I was talking when the USS Tucson was awarded her first Navy unit commendation, which is the second highest next to a, I mean, they did some good stuff to get that award. They won two of them. And I was talking to a chief that had been in submarines for a long time. I said, wow, and obviously he couldn't tell me about the mission. But he says, look, in all the time I've been in submarines, that was one of the hairiest missions I've ever been on. That's all I could say. That's all I needed to say. But you say that to a senator or congressman when you say I need another $100 billion, that may not be enough. So
no, and by the way, to say it out loud, I know from personal experience that our representatives, both senators and congressmen, especially in the Intelligence Committee and the Defense, they are extraordinarily bright and they get the kind of briefs they need. So they're aware of that. This is a democracy, and
sure,
people have to fall in behind and support and making sure that they're cognizant of, again, with all the other competing interests we have, it's really important that that folks are paying attention to what's going on out there, especially with the rises from near-peer competitors here in the world.
Well, yeah, there's only so many places, there's only so much money, so with the new administration, I hope that submarines don't get a short shrift. And part of what I wanted to, in this briefing, what really struck me is the briefer mentioned, okay, we've got great equipment. We've got superb sailors, some of the best trained in the world. But you know what? You take one Yahoo with a boat that's probably not as good, and you put them in the right location, they could wreak a lot of havoc. So being able to stay competitive and have enough resources to just be able to spread them out where we need to have them is something that folks need to think about. And when we get back, well, let me just throw some numbers out here. Kevin, I expect you to correct me if I'm wrong, but I want to talk about this after the break a little bit, your thoughts on it. When we look at the list of who's got the most submarines, we're, I think, number one, total submarines, not just fast attack. China, number two. North Korea, number three. Then we got Russia and Iran. Now, you look at that list, how many of those five people are buddy-buddy with the United States? Not so much. We're not getting invited to their house for, dinner on a regular basis. So that's what I want to talk about when we come back. Folks, your host, Ben Buehler-Garcia. We're live in studio with Navy Captain Kevin Pepe talking about the Silent Service submarines. Give us a call, 751-1041. We'll be right back.
If you want to discuss those who serve the red, white, and blue, dial 520-751-1041. Now, back to the American Warrior.
Welcome back, folks. Your host, Ben Bula Garcia. We've got about 9 more minutes here on American Warrior today, talking about submarines, the silent service. Got an amazing guest expert in studio, Kevin Pepe. 5 different submarines he's been out on. And no offense, but the one you commanded is now out of business. Did they just scrap it, or is it a training sub now?
Well,
is
it, it's just gone? It was decommissioned.
Okay. So if you have a question or comment, very shy guest, but he'll tell you what he thinks. 751-1041, give us a call. Kevin, before we took the break, I talked about the numbers. And one other thing I think to clarify is people say, well, we've got nuclear submarines and they've got diesel boats. The diesel submarines that are being produced nowadays are very quiet. They're very hard to find. People might picture something out of a World War II movie with the steam coming out the top. That's not what we're talking about.
No, but Ben, before I go there, let me back up, because you said something important I thought before the break, and that was you mentioned that we have, the best people and the best equipment, and I think both those are true. And I just like to kind of go back to where I almost started with, and say we do have the best sailors out there. It's unbelievable what these people do. I was about to say kids. They're younger than my children, but it's unbelievable what they do. But again, to say it right, they can't do what they do without their families and without their family support. And so I don't want to lose sight of the fact that when we talk about these great people, whether they're Army, Air Force, Marines, Navy guys, sailors, submariners, it's really about their families and what they deal with. I'll give you a practical for instance. I'm going to use my case only because I'm most familiar with it. Lori's my trophy bride of 41 years. We had been in the Navy for 16 years at this point. We and our 6 children had moved 16 times in those 16 years.
Oh, my gosh.
Now, most people would think, even moving once or twice is sort of a life-changing event. We moved 16 times, and when I say we, I mean she, because I was almost always at sea. She almost always did it by herself. Can you imagine schools and all the things that go on? And then you mentioned best equipment. Again, that goes back to our great shipbuilders and the folks on Taylor's team over here at Missiles who build those fantastic Tomahawks. Without that defense industrial base and the Patriots who man the defense industrial base, we'd be nowhere. So I don't want to lose sight of the fact that, again, we're talking about the Warriors here, but the supporting cast is so important that I want people to realize just how much they mean to our national defense. And frankly, Ben, the kind of stuff you do with this program is the same sort of thing. It makes a big difference. People have to be out there talking about it, raising the issues, and having conversations. Otherwise, it really falls.
It's important that people understand, because that's one of the things I'm very grateful for, is the experience to some extent to go out and actually experience this. Kind of a completely left field example, but right now we're talking about building the Great Wall across the borders, and I had the opportunity to go out there and patrol that border both by air and on the ground. And that gave me, I tell you, if you haven't done it and you're in this conversation, you need to go down there and do it before you, well, I'll leave it at that.
Personal insights into these things are invaluable.
So coming back to the importance of it, I read this, during the 1982 Falklands War, a single unlocated Argentine submarine caused the expenditure of 203 British anti-submarine weapons. They never got them.
Right.
Those numbers alone, that case, and that's not been that long ago, 1982, shows the capability of the silent service, if you will. But how are those things changing now? I'd like to talk about innovation. Are submarines quieter, faster? What sorts of things, as an example, the Navy is really working on using lasers as a weapon and sorts of things above the surface. Are we talking about that? Are we talking about unmanned submarines down the line? And some of this, you maybe have to say, can't answer that question. But, do you see that sort of diversification taking place with the technology of the submarine force as well?
Well, even the, I don't think we've talked about it yet, but the Los Angeles class being replaced by the Virginia class. And the Virginia class has a significant degree of autonomy built into it. So we're able to bring the manning requirements down. And that's very helpful on de-stressing the force, if you will, because these things do demand people. to the threat you talked about in the Falklands, for instance, you were spot on when you said you shouldn't think of these diesel submarines as sort of second rate or something like that. These are fantastic mm-hmm. submarines. Now, the United States maintains, and rightfully, a nuclear force for a very important reason. When we need to get somewhere, we're not going to do this in our backyard off the coast of California, or we're not going to do it off the coast of Virginia. We're going to go fight that fight over there. Mm-hmm. And we need to get there now, today, not yesterday or the day before. And so for us, it's really important. But for others, it's not. They don't have to go such a great distance because we're going to come to them. We're not going to fight the fight here. And so these diesel submarines are producing today are extraordinarily capable. And let me just say this so you know. The nation cannot afford to lose an aircraft carrier. This nation cannot mm-hmm. afford to lose an aircraft carrier. And if there's something that keeps...
Both literally and figuratively.
If there's something yeah. that keeps our battle group commanders and our carrier skippers awake at night, it's a submarine, a diesel submarine, with a single torpedo that's going to go... And that's why all these weapons are expended. We can't afford to lose it in the Falklands. We can't afford mm-hmm. to lose the capital ships. And so something we didn't talk about, but it's really important, is the surface ships. And their associated force structures, their ability to find submarines, it's a tough, tough business. And we need to make sure they can do that because the submarines are going to be our submarines. They're going to be helpful in that. Mm-hmm. Obviously, they're going to be helpful. Key. But your listeners would be very proud to watch the sonar folks on destroyers and other ships, aircraft, P-8s, all those things, go out and find other submarines, but it's a dangerous business, and that's where we got to apply a lot of resources.
Well, and I'm glad you brought that up, and just, again, for our listeners who don't know much about submarines, might be listening for the first time, you brought up an interesting point for people to understand. One of the advantages of a nuclear power plant is you don't have to stop for gas.
No.
In fact, you don't have to surface for anything other than food. I mean, you're making your own air, you're making your own water, right? I mean, right. pretty much.
Yeah, The throttle on submarine capabilities and deployments can very frequently turn on food.
Mm.
Because you are making your own air, you are making your own water, you are taking care of all your own business till the supplies run out. And once it's not going to be gas.
Mm-hmm.
Those nuclear power plants are fantastic. But when you run out of food, it's tough to keep the crew going in the right direction.
When we talk about technology and the increased technology because you know, we're pretty bright guys here, Kevin, but if we know this, I'm guessing the bad guys do, too.
I'm looking behind me. Who are you talking to, exactly?
And the idea of how do we improve the technology for finding these submarines and protecting our ships or our personnel from these submarines, the maybe kind of an old school, Iran seems to part of their strategy is just to swarm people with boats. That seems to be their strategy for attacking the capital ships. But what other things that are... as far as the technology for finding submarines, you'd mentioned, I think Raytheon has produced a weapon that is much lighter. It's a torpedo that can be launched from helicopters or planes and is very, very effective.
Yeah.
What other kinds of threats out there? Are our anti-submarine technologies getting better, too, as far as the U.S.?
Yeah. So I didn't, in all that talk, I didn't mention another fantastic slice of this very necessary pie that we have to defend our nation, and that's the labs and educational organizations like University of Arizona, like Penn State, who dedicate significant resources towards that front edge, front line sort of innovation. And I would tell you and the listeners that we're moving ahead in that. We're moving ahead brightly. We could always use more, but there are some extraordinarily bright people out there who have looked at very innovative ways to keep the nation safe, not just our at-sea resources from submarine attack, but you mentioned something earlier, maybe it was just to me, but there's, you know, we have to be mindful of the fact that, you know, our Tomahawk missile is a pretty capable thing that can do fantastic stuff. Imagine the damage that could be done by a rogue bad guy submarine out there mm-hmm. who had capabilities similar to that and could launch against the West Coast or East Coast or the Gulf Coast. Big deal. And so we have to be able to protect those shorelines, and there are tremendous Americans out there working at that problem today. I can't speak to the specifics and the details. I would tell you that that was part of the business I was responsible for back east before I came back here. So I'm knowledgeable about it, and I'm very, very proud of the work they're doing.
What kind of coming back to that, and I'm glad, one other thing I want to emphasize, you mentioned it too, for a long time, everybody knows that when a member of our service deploys, the whole family deploys. And I found it interesting, in that whole conversation about your Navy career, you always used we. Because maybe subconsciously you knew it was not just you that was serving, but it was your family that was serving our nation as well.
Yeah, when you said a little bit about me, you didn't mention the most important thing, is that was my wife suffered to marry me. And had she not done that, I wouldn't be where I am today.
Clearly she's a saint.
For sure.
Yeah.
It is definitely a partnership. And as I say, there are many times when the bulk of the work falls on the spouse. And I don't think often enough we recognize that. And I mean, we say it all the time. I had a chance to talk up in Phoenix about this topic last week. We say it all the time, but and sometimes it almost sounds like words. When you really see what those people do day in and what the children have to go through with the father being gone or the mother being gone, it's a big deal. And they're unsung heroes. They really are.
No question. Well, Kevin, thank you. Speaking of which, thank you of your service for all those many years, not just in the Navy, but also on the other side, helping develop the weapons that keep our men and women safe and take care of the bad guys when we need them to be taken care of. One, I always like this to be productive for folks, so I just want to share this, and again, Captain, correct me if I'm wrong, but the takeaway from this show, just so when you're out there, folks, in San Diego, never call a member of the submarine force a submariner. Always a submariner, right?
So
we won't get into that. Folks, what a great show. Your host, Ben Dula Garcia. Thanks for Kevin Papio for being here. Hey, you can find podcasts, AmericanWarriorRadio.com, also on iTunes, Stitcher.com, and Player FM. You can even follow us on the Roku streaming device at the Nowhere Cast. Again, we'll have those posted up this afternoon. Follow us on Facebook, American Warrior Radio, or on Twitter, Warrior Radio TUC. Always welcome to send us an email, warriorradio@cox.com. Thank you so much for your time, folks. Thank you for tuning in. Thanks for Kevin, and thanks to all the men and women out there who are serving our country today. Until next time, all policies and procedures are to remain in place.